Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
To show you how easy it is to file a claim with Geico, we hired a scary movie victim.
Oh no, a tree fell on my car, and there's only one thing to do. Trip over my own feet and pull myself across the lawn while yelling help at a barely audible volume.
Sorry to interrupt, but you filed a claim with Geico, so you've got a designated claims team to help you.
This Geico sounds suspiciously reassuring. Are you sure I don't end up getting surprised with an unexpected twist?
Just that your Geico team will always be there to keep you updated.
No!
What is it?
Oh, nothing. I just didn't see that coming.
Geico. Great service without all the drama.
Hello, hello. Welcome to October 29th, 2020's Cannabis Hour. Yeah, I am Elliot Lane here with Notorious Nodo, also known as Tony.
That is what my last name means in Italian, Notorious.
Is it really?
Hello. Yeah. Welcome. But we are not notorious at this time. We are noteworthy. We are authoritative figures in the cannabis world. We are going to bring people top news as we do every day, but we're going to bring you the people behind the company today. And we have a good show lined up, Elliot.
Amen. Thanks everybody for sticking around for the pre-market prep crowd. Honestly, this is probably the most exciting cannabis hour we've done, not to, you know, give not to do to anybody else who's been on this show, but we are starting off with three major industry leaders, but we're leading in to something really, really interesting and special and on top of literally everybody's mind. Tony, why don't you give us a little insight as to what's happening at 5 o'clock as well?
Yes, we invite our listeners to stick around because we're going to be doing a one-hour election special. We're going to be talking about cannabis regulation. What's at stake on November 3rd? That's coming up in case you've been living under a rock or involved in some sort of cult where you don't have access to technology or TV or radio. We are doing this two-hour special Benzinga Cannabis event. And for the second half, we have some amazing guests from Cresco Labs. Just going to go run down the list. Cresco Labs, Acreage Holdings, Canopy Growth, Forefront Ventures. Guests from those companies are lined up for the second half, so please stick around.
But not to go too far ahead, though. We have some exciting guests here in the first hour with 1933, Next Green Wave, and Front Range Biosciences, all three amazing companies in their own right. So let's get to it. Let's get right into this with our good friend Paul Rosen. He is the CEO of 1933 Industries out of Nevada. They are, I believe... they were the first medical cannabis brand in the state of Nevada. If I'm not, Paul, am I right about that?
Sure. One of the first.
Just claim it. We'll fact check it later.
One
of the first.
One of the first. Okay. Well, my apologies on being so subjective. But Paul, we're happy to have you. How are you today?
Elliot, it's a pleasure. Tony, really great to see you as well. I'm having a great day. Banging away, working hard, having fun.
Oh, that's good. I hope we don't ruin that fun with this interview.
Oh, this is going to be probably one of the many highlights of hopefully what will continue to be a good day. I'm real good. Thanks for asking. I hope you guys are as well.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, go ahead, Tony. I was just going to say notoriously noteworthy day.
Well, it's good to put a face to a name because Paul was kind enough to lend some commentary to a feature that I wrote recently for Benzinga.com. It was regarding the uptick in rock stars and celebrities that are backing cannabis brands. And you gave a great quote, and I'm going to read it back to you just in case nobody read that article. You should. It's on the website right now.
Fabulous piece of journalism, may I say.
Well, Paul said, I don't have any data per se that suggests that consumers gravitate towards brands with recognizable IP, but it's fair to say that Snoop's brand, Snoop Dogg, he was referring to, is one of the better sellers in the market, but he's been a champion of cannabis for his entire life. I would argue mostly they are duds, with some exceptions where authenticity is part of the celebrity brand. And you cited Tommy Chong, Snoop Dogg, I think Willie Nelson, Bob Marley as celebrities that have a certain weight to their name in the cannabis community. And people know that because their name is associated with cannabis in the public eye.
They have cred. And I think our industry wants authenticity. At least a segment of our industry craves, wants, demands, requires authenticity. And it seemed like every, you know, from A-list to C-minus list celebrity, regardless of any previous affiliation with the plant, you know, it sees this as a bit of a gold rush and sees it as an opportunity to make money. And I'm not, I want everyone big, wide, we need a big wide open tent. This is our industry. We're not going to play the role of gatekeeper, but personally, I've always been somewhat dubious. And I feel like what really sells is great product. And if you put a famous face on shitty product, if I may say that word, I think I can, I don't really think it's going to do anyone a service, including the beautiful face that's on it. And if you have good product, you probably don't need the extra lift of you know, of a celebrity, but there are those exceptions because they are iconic figures, if you will. If there's a Mount Rushmore, some of these names are on that, and you know, to the degree that a user will gravitate towards that because they appreciate the legacy of that person. But I'd rather see like some of the pioneers and activists that maybe are like I'm involved as is 1933 with Jack Herrera, or the he's deceased now, but the family. But that's a good example of the ultimate authenticity, right? This is a person that I would argue, but for their contribution, we probably wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation this afternoon. And that resonates to me as a consumer, because I'm a consumer, right? I'm a comfortable in the grow room and in the boardroom kind of person. And so I gravitate to great product, but if I see a real connection to somebody that matters to me, and I think played a heroic or instrumental role in creating the world that we're all in right now. Yeah, that might, you know, that might give the nod to that, you know, that jar versus a different jar.
Well, that's my next question for you is what makes 1933 the authentic? Like for those listening, they could just say, oh, what makes Paul an authority? I mean, I like Gene Simmons on my cannabis product. I don't think that it's a gold rush at all. What makes you guys so special?
Yeah, no one's going to buy any form factor from 1933 because of me. Even though, you know, I think I'm a hell of a guy and all that stuff. That's not what we're marketing. I'll go back to what I said is 1933 as an example before I became CEO had like a lot of companies brought this sort of house of brand strategy where they were signing up a lot of brands that had some oomph and some recognition to bring to Nevada. Nothing wrong with that strategy. But I looked at us as we have a high quality product. Our flower is incredible. Our concentrates are incredible. And unless we're unable to sell all of it under our own brand, there's not really much of an intelligent business case to be made to pay a licensing fee to a celebrity. So ultimately, I don't think you can, I'm not going to use the word trick, but I think a consumer is going to ultimately in the long term gravitate to so-called best products, aside from how cool or cutting edge or rad the branding is. And I think we have great branding in 1933, but I don't think this is an industry where marketing can overcome quality of product. We've seen other industries where that's the case. I think in cannabis, one of the great things about it is quality of product ultimately becomes the key differentiator. So we make great products. Therefore, we believe the market will choose those products because they're great. They're what they're looking for. And whether it has, it'd be nothing wrong to have an association with a credible celebrity. We have a deal with Tony Hawk for our CBD line. But he's credible. He's authentic. He's an athlete and he's a cultural figure. So starts with the product. And if you have surplus capacity and you can help move that great product by associating with someone that has a community that you can't seem to tap into yourself, that's when the case should be made. In my opinion, if you mentioned Gene or Invictus, turning the whole company identity into the celebrity, while it might occasionally work, I'm going to say if you run that enough times, you're going to fail most of those times.
Very interesting. So, you know, obviously the celebrity aspect is a part of the strategy. It's not the full strategy, but, you know, in terms of how you're positioning yourself, can you tell us a little bit more about Nevada, you know, what the state market is like right now and how you all are, you know, positioning yourself in it to outperform?
Yeah. So Nevada is coming back from COVID. It was a definite, like every business, for a while, it was immediately impacted by COVID. Maybe a bit worse in Nevada because of the dependence on tourism, which Grand Teton Hall, and also the dispensaries are actually closed. One of only two states that actually physically closed dispensaries. But what we offer, so first of all, the market is a great market. It's one of the larger TAMs, if you will, in regular tourism. And it has had, if you look at the wholesale price of a pound of premium flower in Nevada, it's still, you know, in that $3,000 range, which is holding up in what is now a very mature economy. We're a premium indoor craft grower. That's going to be our major call to action. We're producing, I think, outstanding flower. We have, in some of our strains, we're able to get THC ratio into the mid-30s. Clean, beautiful, well-grown, well-tended product, and our concentrates cover the full sort of spectrum of pretty much every form factor possible. So we're a true artisanal craft grower, but we've got scale to that. We're not growing in a tiny facility. We're in a 68,000 foot purpose-built production cultivation facility, augmented by a 13,000 foot lab. And why we do well and why I think we're gonna do really well going forward is we've had a meaningful increase in our production capacity just in the current quarter we're in. Like a lot of construction projects in cannabis, took a bit longer and a bit more challenges to get our building. But now we're really starting to produce a volume of flower that's literally a 10X what we used to be able to produce. And the quality is going up. And so we're going to keep it simple. You know, I think that the cannabis business is just a business. I've run several of them outside of the cannabis industry. A good product at a fair price going to sell all day long, very much in the cannabis industry. And so that's what we represent. We grow and we produce and manufacture great products. We price them fairly. We have a good distribution network and we're chosen because of our quality.
And sales haven't really taken a hit during COVID, right, for you guys? I mean, my colleague Yelena published a story that said Planet 13 really saw an uptick in sales despite the lack of tourism in Nevada. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah. I'll, you know, as a reporting company, I need to be careful not to disclose financial information that hasn't been released. But let me speak about the whole market of which we're a participant in. And so, yes, there was a short term, you know, punch in the gut when the dispensaries closed for everybody. There's no way April was a regular month for any operator in the industry. We lost, without any notice, our major distribution channel. And while they filled in with delivery and curbside, it could never create, like Planet 13 could not home deliver the same amount of customer flow they could take in that incredible emporium that they've built. But what I've learned is that we're not as dependent on tourism as I thought, which is really an interesting takeaway. So tourism has recovered, but it's still, you know the world we're in right now. COVID's still very live, very serious public health issue. Nothing's fully back the way it was. Certainly Nevada's no different. But we've seen, we have data that the local market is hungry for the products, and that largely we can probably bring all our products to market and sell with a modest tourist market, not what it once was and what it will be again soon, but just on the strength of the domestic market. So to answer your question specifically, at a macro level, September was a very good month. I believe September, I was just reading this morning, maybe in one of the reports, that September 2020 was a bigger top line for the Nevada cannabis industry than September 2019. So in that sense, we were impacted, but we've snapped back. And unlike other economies, I was confident, but I was really not sure if this tourism thing was going to be an overhang that was really quite unique to just Nevada, and happily that's not the case. And when tourism resumes, then I think you're going to see Nevada is a booming market. And one of, in my opinion, from a macroeconomic perspective, one of the most desirable markets to be an operator in across the United States.
Were you already well positioned, once COVID obviously hit the market, or were the things that you had to do to recover so quickly, or did it just happen naturally?
Well, I mean, we're not vertically integrated, which is, you know, this caught my attention. So we could not deliver our own products to customers when the dispensaries are not open. We're a wholesaler, cultivator, manufacturer. So we didn't have necessarily the same toolkit of a dispensary that actually could use their dispensary license for a delivery license. So there was, to some degree, not much we could do in the immediate short term, but this all collided with a management change in the company. And so new management came in, including myself, in beginning of June. And let's just say that, you know, our boots have been really full doing what I think is a very hopefully intelligent and ideally successful big turnaround, you know, refocusing this company on its key priorities, which is to get to profitability as soon as possible, doing some work on the balance sheet. So it has been a really active time for us. And now we're back, you know, we're feeling pretty good about what our future prospects are. But I'm also paying close attention for the opportunity at the appropriate time to get more vertically integrated, because I think that would have created some, if you will, immunization around the impacts of COVID, because we would have been able to have a more direct relationship with our customer.
And there's some discussion, I mean, we've had on this show in regards to, you know, profitability in retail versus vertical integration. Yeah. It sounds like, you know, we're leaning towards the latter there, but in terms of what's next for 1933, in terms of US opportunities, where are we going?
I've had a good run of it in the cannabis industry since starting in 2012. I was founder and co-founder and president of CEO PharmaCann, which is now the Cronus Group. So I've gotten, you know, spoiled, if you will, to the idea that we want to play sort of long ball here. But also, I will say that our industry, in some instances, really needs to focus on getting on base, if you will, to use an analogy. So when I became the CEO of 1933, I really wanted to refocus this company on maximizing its core asset, which is what we have in Nevada. And as much as I would like to be in multiple states or more additional verticals, in my mind, anything that wasn't going to accelerate our path towards profitability was not necessary and possibly reckless, because, you know, we're want to make sure that we eliminate counterparty risk, that we're able to be a profitable company, so that if there was some seizure in capital markets, we'd be just fine. And I do believe in long tail investment strategy. I've been a very long tail investor. So step one is to continue doing what myself and my co-executives have done, which is really get towards profitability on a much more accelerated timeline, even if that means in the short term turning our attention from development opportunities abroad, if you will, in another state. And then my view is that once, and I'm confident we are getting closer and we'll accomplish that, then we'll be in a better position to go back into growth mode. So we're going to grow in terms of our revenue and our earnings, I predict, just in Nevada right now. I think we have a lot of room from where we are right now to where we could max out in Nevada without even having to buy more assets, just on the basics of our paid up infrastructure. I forecast that we can significantly increase our revenue and profitability without any more capital X into the company, or very little. And so that's what I'm going to do. And then, I'm going to learn from some of the mistakes of many of my colleagues early in this industry, which is not try to do too many things at the same time. It doesn't always work out. I don't have enough fingers to count the number of companies that made that mistake.
Yeah.
So I'm going back to fundamentals here. I'm playing this for the long haul. I'm not in a hurry. I'm in a hurry to make this company excellent, but we're early enough in, and I say that after almost a decade in this industry, that when I don't feel there will be lack of opportunity to expand beyond Nevada, I just think we'll be in a better position to do it when we've squeezed Nevada to, like, if you will, every last drop and proven our excellence. I love some of the state specialists. I love Trulieve. Now, I know they're moving to other states, but I think they showed a lot of focus on making their bones in one state that they're going to have a dominant footprint in. And now they have this incredible platform in which to leverage that to other states as they're doing.
Right.
That I relate to that. I think that's sound, sober, good strategy.
Yeah, you're echoing what Justin Dye over at Schwaz said. Like, he kind of wants to be the, you know, he wants to dominate Colorado. Like, he's like zeroing in on that state. Well, I got to ask though, what does 1933 stand for? Where does the company get its name?
I think it's from it's funny. I know I wasn't there when the company was founded. It's, I think, a conflation between, I think, that Securities Act of 1933 that's mentioned in every undertaking ever. And I think also I could Google it, but I think that was on or about when cannabis was, I'm not sure if that was the date that cannabis entered the illegal narcotic classification, but I think it's a double nod at the history of cannabis reform and a little wink, I guess, at Bay Street, where this company was born out of from that securities exemption.
Okay.
Interesting. I got to tell you, Paul, it seems like with your last answer, the shareholders are rejoicing. The 1933 is in great hands.
Yeah, we're going to get, we're confident that we're going, you know, I'm going to just do my best, no self-dealing, work hard. Business is hard. It's my 13th company taking a leadership role. For all companies, business is hard. But I've never seen anything with the right attitude and the right sort of perspiration fail yet in my career. Quite the opposite. I've been able to be a part of some really big successes. And, you know, as I said, we're playing the long game here. And I think for shareholders with a long-term perspective, we're a company really worth looking at.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Nope. Go right ahead. One more question for Tony.
Yeah. Before we know you're short on time, we want you to wrap up. But before you go, I don't know if you heard at the top of the hour, we're going to do an election special. Best case scenario after November 3rd. What's your quick 1 minute take?
Okay. Fascinating topic. Always ask the Canadian about U.S. politics. moonshot is under, and I won't choose a party, but moonshot is descheduling cannabis, essentially creating the foundation for a U.S. legal cannabis market. I'm sure there'll be some state accommodations made so Alaska can still have a domestic program. Status quo is not the worst scenario at all, to be honest. A reschedule down to Schedule 2 concerns me a little bit. It brings in the FDA, and it's likely that a lot of our facilities that are doing great business now would need to upgrade in order to maintain compliance with FDA requirements. And FDA pharmaceutical facility is very different than a state licensing, and likely a lot of our better companies are still not quite there. So, but I'm going to predict that no matter what happens, blue or red, Senate one way, Senate or the other, that there's an irrevocable momentum towards sensible cannabis reform. And it's the only bipartisan issue that there's agreement on. I mean, as much as there is a polarity in America politics between almost every issue, this is the only big issue of the day that there is a consensus and an overwhelming consensus from both the left and the right, the coast, the middle of America, the elites and the working class, if you will. So it's so self-evident to all of us in the industry that only good things will happen when we lift off this stupid moratorium or overhang. Capital will come in, new markets will open up, and America's missing a huge opportunity, which is to dominate on a global basis. Mm-hmm. And Canada is dominating on a global basis, little itty bitty Canada, because we have a federally legal program, so we can export our IP and our products and do all these amazing things. And this is what America ought to be and should be doing and will be doing. So I see it either way, that there's going to be a meaningful path to reform, even if the Republicans improbably won all three branches of government. I still think it's going to happen.
Well, thank you, Paul, so much for that. We know you're busy. 1933industries.com. We will make sure everybody has that address, but reach out to us, Paul. If there's any place that they can find you, please let us know now. Otherwise, my friend, you have a great rest of your day, and hopefully we'll talk to you again very soon.
So much fun, guys. Thank you so much. I had a great time. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, Paul.
All right.
Great guest.
Man, Paul Rosen. I mean, he truly is a leader in the industry. He has been around, I would say, for close to a decade, you know, within the industry, leading businesses, you know, working with investors, working with legalization. It seems to me, you know, we're talking to, we can't pick his brain enough.
Yeah. So. And it's a great point when he goes, I'm not going to pick red or blue, but it's a bipartisan issue. Most people, depending, not counting party lines, want some sort of cannabis reform.
Well, and to Tom Zuber's point, I'm a little surprised the Republicans haven't legalized it to an extent already. You know, they had nothing to lose. So, you know, for me, you know, I would imagine we'll see, hopefully, like Paul said, some progress on there relatively soon.
Yeah.
So more to come on the election special, though. That's just a teaser, and I'm sure we'll get a few more teasers in there. Shall we go ahead and bring over our next guest?
Yeah, Ryan Lang is on deck, and he's from Next Green Wave. I have a little bit of a bone to pick with him. I asked him to provide some commentary for a feature that I was writing, and he never got back to me. So here he is.
Oh, he knew we were going to host him on Cannabis Hour. Ryan, you may need to turn your video on there, my friend. Can you hear us?
Come on, as he's, don't bail on us now, Ryan.
He's here. I know he's here.
While he gets ready, let's do a little. Go ahead.
I want to hear your thoughts, man. It seems to me it could just be a marketing thing. You know, I'm not trying to overcomplicate something here, and I want to hear Ryan. We see him. We see him there.
Finally
now.
Here. Sorry about that. Had a restart.
No worries.
It restarted me.
No worries. Zoom. I feel like Zoom just likes to play with us all every now and then.
It's the new normal. We're on planet Zoom, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, exactly, Ryan, since you're here as well, man, we'll hop in the Next Green Wave here shortly, but I'm super interested in, tell me if I'm overcomplicating this, please do. It seems like hip hop stars are a focus, or actors are a focus, or athletes are a focus. Athletes I get for CBD, but outside of that, is it just the following? Is there some sort of overall grand plan in terms of what type of celebrity for your brand works? I'm just curious. You know, Paul got me thinking a little bit in our last segment.
Yeah, because I reached out to you, Ryan, because I know you guys teamed up with King Louis, who's a hip hop artist. Like, what made him a guy worthwhile to partner with?
Sure. Yeah. So similar to Paul's story with his company, at Next Green Wave, we've done a little bit of a refocus on how many brands we're going to work with. And how much attention we can give and time. We did partner up with King Louis. He's a hip hop artist out of Chicago, and he's got a great support network. I would say that similar to what Paul had just said too, for us, I don't think we'd really ever partner up with anybody just to slap somebody's name on a brand and hope that it's gonna sell. Mm-hmm. Because that typically doesn't work, and you know, our products stand for themselves. So the flower that we're putting out is doesn't need, I guess, essentially a brand name on it. I would say that why is it that music or, you know, artists like that end up being attached to cannabis brands? I would say it's probably, again, back to the authenticity. It's like, it's been interwoven in music forever, not just in hip hop, in all forms of music. People have consumed cannabis and kind of have seemed to go hand in hand. I think you'll see, you know, there are some brands that have worked well in the space. You know, obviously you look at somebody like Burner with Cookies and what they've done and the program they've put together. There's a couple of other hit successes, but for the most part, similar to what Paul had just said, you know, you see that most of them just don't work out because, you know, like you can't just take somebody that's never been part of the cannabis world and then on a package and hope that somebody's going to buy it. You know, the industry is, you know, really craving a bit of a cleanup in that space. Right. And, you know, authenticity is king. And I even think not just you take the celebrity piece out of it, just white labeled brands in general, brands that aren't producing their own flower or their own products or are not even really highly connected to what, you know, what they're putting out the door. You're going to see a lot of those brands not do well in the space.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's worth noting that there's a difference between an ambassador to a brand or a celebrity ambassador rather, and someone who's actually actively involved in launching a type of brand or a company. I know that Paul made a point of talking about that a little bit. Certain folks are hands-on. I believe Carlos Santana is hands-on. I believe that Jerry Garcia's family is working with Holistic, and Josh Gunderson over at Holistic about a new item. And so it's different from, you know, Kristen Bell. Kristen Bell launched her own company and today there was a big story about Gwyneth Paltrow, Ruby Rose, and Rebel Wilson all backing cannabis beverage. I don't know how actively they are in the decision making or the product itself. So there is a difference, though. Wouldn't you say, like how involved would King Louis be with Next Green Wave?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think there is the industry is craving that transparency of the products that they get, you know, not just from testing, but also, you know, who's touching it, who's making decisions about what's going out to market. As far as, you know, the partnerships that we're doing, the teams that we work with, or if we are ever do a brand extension, they're pretty involved in most of the things, you know, as far as selections of products and all of that stuff. I would say that the biggest leader in, again, right now, what's happening in the space, or even with COVID and all the changes that have happened, the industry is craving quality product. And there has been a big shortage, it seems like, of producers that could actually meet the scale, meet the demand on that quality sector. And so brand is important, and the people that you surround yourself with and all that are important. But again, quality, I think, is going to come in first. And then some of the things that are more, you know, right now that are sought after, like strain selections, and, consumers are really educated, and they're becoming more highly more like connoisseurs, similar to like the wine market or any other market that gains interest. And they're actually, you know, consumers are driving type a lot of the things that, you know, we do and that, you know, other brands are doing, because the demand for those, you know, more exotic strains and higher testing THC and, you know, certain processes and ways, like, for example, we're producing at scale, but we're probably one of the only bigger companies that are hand trimming flower and hand processing most of everything that comes out of our building is hand processed. So there's no big machines that are trimming things. There's no big machines that are jarring things. And that's by design. So, and that's because there's consumer segments that are looking for that very, very high end flower experience. Sorry, I kind of went all over the place on your question about brands.
I love it. That leads us into Next Green Wave. So that was a perfect transition there. We let our audience hear more about you guys. You know, I think you guys should be on the tip of our tongues like a lot of other cannabis companies. So tell us a little bit about why and, you know, your focus and your mission over there.
Yeah, sure. We're probably one of the better cannabis companies that you've never heard of. So we are, you know, we're a smaller team out of Central California. And our mission right now is really to put out that, connoisseur cannabis experience. And we're very, very focused in on our flower program right now, and have really kind of not stripped away, but kind of moved aside any kind of distractions and have really focused in. Our flower's found across California. We're known really for some of the more unique phenos that we have. A lot of bigger public companies wouldn't take the time to really do a proper pheno hunt. But our CEO and one of the founders, he comes from a legacy of cannabis growers. His father actually was a cannabis grower. So knows the importance of, you know, selecting the right genetics, and not just finding the right genetics, but finding the needle in the haystack of that specific genetic that's going to be the real winner. So that makes us really unique right now. I would say that we could probably sell our flower without a brand on the side of the jar, because it's that good. And we've really kept things very simple as far as packaging is concerned, specifically, again, back by design, almost like anti-packaging, you know, because there's kind of been this pendulum swing from these very fancy packaged products with lots of, you're seeing it on, people that come with a bunch of extra extensions. You know, when you get something from us, it's as minimal as possible, so we can put the very best, you know, potency, best quality out there to consumers at the best price.
Yeah. That seems rare to me, having a cultivator as a CEO. You know, nowadays it's an investor, it's a former banker, it's nowadays CPG former executive. You know, it seems to me like. You know, you have the business, the finance kind of driving the industry, and for a reason. Have you all found that, you know, having a cultivator in the lead role running the company has given you all a leg up in terms of having such superior product?
Excellent point.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that a growing company like ourselves at Next Green Wave, you know, we, you know, have aspirations to be, you know, one of the great companies in the space and in the US, obviously. And that comes with having great leadership. Mike's actually a unique CEO where he can actually speak both, you know, kind of he could talk in a boardroom, but he also can really run things in the grow room. I would also say that part of our success is found in that, you know, people that like myself and like Mike that are more on the creative and cannabis side of the world and less on the, you know, investor side, like you were saying. We're also surrounded ourselves by people that are really smart and really understand how to shepherd our company from where it's at to where we want to go. That's, you know, even in you've kind of seen, we've done some, there's been some changes on our board, and, you know, we're really staging ourselves to be that next level company. And I think as far as the uniqueness, it really has provided a unique aspect where I would say that's why a lot of the big public companies or the big traded companies have such a bad rap in the industry, is they were led investor focus led. And there was a lot of mismanaged spending, and there was a lot of, you know, failures in the space. We were able to kind of, you know, thankfully miss a lot of those things, because there's the nuances that don't get missed when you have a leader that understands what's happening in, you know, across the board and inside of a facility like ours.
So what would you say is like an example of mismanaged spending?
Oh, I would say, I mean, you know, you guys just brought up brands, but if you look at like somebody like Dan Bilzerian's brand, I don't know what they blew through, but they blew through quite a large amount of money. And, you know, that's not something that would happen, you know, as far as, you know, it'd be even like down to things like, you know, if the company was more investor run, there's a chance that, you know, maybe the wrong equipment would be purchased, for example. And, you know, you'd be running your whole facility on the wrong stuff. And so it's down to all those nuances where our team really understands what we're doing, what's needed. We're extremely lean as far as the type of team that we have. So we don't have a lot of extra things that we're spending on inside of our facility.
Hmm. One could say you're a cannabis producer first and foremost. That is the overall goal. I'd love to hear more about the California market. You know, I feel like it is the ever discussed elephant in the room. You know, I hear a lot when, you know, on calls with a lot of different companies, there's kind of a East Coast versus West Coast feel, emphasis on verse.
You definitely have the better pizza.
True. But so, you know, being a cannabis producer, being a public company, being more focused on the premium side of cannabis, you know, do you see any validity to that? Do you see California, you know, changing more toward a mainstream market anytime soon? I know I'm kind of rambling on about California, but I'd love to just get your overall thoughts about the market and where it's going.
Yeah, California, we specifically chose the largest, you know, market in the US, probably one of the largest markets in the world. And as far as going mainstream or looking to go, you know, national, some of those things will happen naturally as decriminalization happens and as companies expand. But right now we're focused 100% on the state that we're in. And there is so much opportunity still within the state that we're in, you know, as we grow and as we find other opportunities for our company to, you know, expand product lines and offerings. You know, we just actually launched our vape cartridges, which for us was something that we waited on for a long time. There was, you know, there's tons of vape brands out there. There was a lot of terrible vape brands out there. And again, to sticking to something that lives up to the flower that we've got out, we waited until we could get the formulation exactly right. And we just put out a full spectrum sauce cartridge that is non-distilled, you know, has zero distillate in it and tons of great terp flavor. So, you know, you'll see us rolling out some of these new extensions of our brand within the state that again gives our company ability to expand, you know, our ability to produce and drive value for our shareholders.
Well, you mentioned decriminalization and we talked about California. Before you go, we have you for another couple of minutes. I don't know if you heard at the top of the hour, we're extending this episode another hour to talk about the election and what that means for the cannabis industry. We had Senator Harris of your state talk about decriminalization on during her debate with VP Mike Pence. How did you feel with that? And is a Biden-Harris ticket the best case scenario for the cannabis industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. Without kind of picking a side, I would say that for us, you know, right now, where we're operating is we're in a great space. I would say that naturally it is going, you know, there is a big push towards looking at decriminalization, and some of the things that we would be excited about would obviously be if there was a rescheduling of some sort, like a decriminalization. You'll see banking opening up. You'll see other investors that were maybe timid in the cannabis space start to look at it as a more serious investment. Overall, though, I think, you know, investors are going to put their money with companies that can perform. And one of the biggest things, you know, for us is that we're a profitable company. You know, we've announced that in the news. There are not many profitable companies in the cannabis space. And so it's something we're pretty proud of. We've worked really hard to get there. And so I think whether or not it's decriminalized or whether or not, you know, who wins the election, I think, you know, investors are going to make their choices based on how the company performs and the team that's there behind it.
Next Green Wave, you're building your company right, Ryan. I mean, I don't think we can really say anything else after this interview. If there's one thing you could leave our audience with, what would it be and where can they find you as well?
Yeah, sure. So you could find us in the US with the ticker symbol NXGWF, and you can find us in Canada on NGW. And yeah, I would say, you know, look for us. We love feedback. So if you want to, you know, find us on social media and let us know if you've tried something of ours and what you like, what you don't. We really like to take that as, you know, that feedback into what we put out into the market. So
perfect.
Hopefully you won't get any hate tweets. Negative
None
tweets.
Of that, yeah.
None of that.
Positive vibes only in this industry, right?
Yeah. Amen. Got to drive it the right way. Ryan, thanks for your time, my friend. It's always good to
no
see
problem.
You. And ideally, it won't be too long before we talk to you again. But all the best to you and your team. Stay healthy, stay well, and we'll look forward to doing this again soon.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate
all
it.
All right, Ryan.
Bye.
All right. Whew, man. We have some two fun guests.
That was a good segment. We talk a little movie talk, music talk, cannabis. You can't get better than that for an hour long conversation.
I know. I mean, we're not even done yet.
Yeah,
so we're
40
changing
minutes
pace
in.
A little bit. Yeah, we're changing pace a little bit.
Yeah.
Front Range Biosciences.
We're going to get technical now, buddy.
Yes. Now we're diving, I should say, into the science aspect of things. So Dr. John Vaught, as he's coming over, he's the founder and CEO of a hemp and cannabis genetics platform company.
That's right.
So many questions.
Yes. I'm going to get my thinking cap on. This is out of my comfort zone. Is the doctor in the house?
Yes, there he is.
Hey,
Dr.
Guys,
Vaught, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, we're good, man. We're having a good show. We have three incredible guests, including yourself, of course. You know, talking about red and blue at 5 o'clock. But first and foremost,
topic of the hour.
Yeah, right. We'll get to it. Don't worry. First and foremost, what is a hemp and cannabis genetics platform company?
Yeah, wow. That's a great question. So at Front Range Biosciences, we fuse proprietary next generation breeding technology with deep research and development. With a focus on developing new genetics, new varieties across a broad range of product categories. And within both the cannabis and hemp verticals, you know, our focus is on delivering quality, performance, and predictability and success for every seed, every plant, and every season, whether we're working with cannabis growers indoors, outdoors, in greenhouse, or hemp growers across the same range of environments.
Wow. How did you get involved? How did you land here?
Yeah.
It's a long story. So, So I guess to tell you a little bit about my background, I started in biotech, primarily human diagnostics, and I have a PhD in from the University of Colorado in Boulder in organic chemistry, and I've spent the last 15 years leading cross-functional teams, developing new technologies, building companies, human diagnostics, agriculture, a little bit in food safety. I also have a small farm in my house in Colorado, and I founded a 501c3 nonprofit called Mountain Flower Dairy here that's focused on providing educational opportunities for the local community to learn about where their food comes from. Along the way, after all of this work and in the kind of human health and wellness and really working closely with pharmaceutical companies over the last, the last 15 years, I got really interested in the intersection between cannabis and agriculture and human health. And, look, any qualified organic chemist would tell you that, at the end of the day, all of the compounds that go into drugs and all of the interesting molecules that we have, they all pretty much start with plants somewhere. And, it turns out plants have been around for quite a long time, long before chemistry was. And they provide some pretty remarkable ingredients, and they're pretty much the foundation for most drugs. And so I saw cannabis as just a really interesting opportunity to move my career more into agriculture. I felt like after looking at all these challenges that we're trying to solve in human healthcare, we focus so much at the very end of life and trying to fix problems that may have happened over the course of years or even decades. And why not focus at the very beginning with things like agriculture and providing ingredients and nutrition and wellness products that can support a healthier lifestyle and maybe prevent some of the more challenging diseases that we suffer from. So that's my motivation to get into it.
Yeah. Well, I was curious, what does it mean to have a clean stock tissue culture nursery? Walk us through that. That's kind of a mouthful there.
Yeah, absolutely. So tissue culture is a technology that's been around for decades in agriculture and horticulture. It really serves as the nucleus of any modern nursery for a broad range of different crops and different plants. And a clean stock program is really it incorporates tissue culture. It also includes parts of the greenhouse, but it's really a quality assurance and a quality control program for the nursery. After coming from the pharma world and the molecular diagnostics world, where everything's highly regulated, we're submitting things to the FDA. I saw clean stock programs when I first learned about them in horticulture as a way to apply a similar level of quality assurance, quality control at the nursery level. And it helps provide a platform for producing clean plants. So preventing the spread of viruses and viroids, which are rampant throughout a lot of different crops, including this one. There's new ones starting to emerge even. And it's really about starting your plants off with a clean slate, if you will. So they're as healthy and vigorous as they possibly can be.
Viruses affecting the plants?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's over 1,000 different, just under 1,000 or just over 1,000 viruses and viroids that affect plants.
So not only do we have to worry about COVID affecting us, we got to worry about our marijuana getting affected from other viruses.
You got it. It's
we can't win. There's one. Can then we not have any nice things?
No, Tony, we're supposed to have fun on the show, man.
Oh yeah, sorry. I forgot.
I know. Why all the negativity here, right?
Wait. So
yeah, it's real. It is real, and this has happened in lots of crops before this one. Some examples: blueberries, strawberries. As some of these crops emerged and really exploded into new markets and places around the world, you spread pathogens, and just like the viruses affect humans and animals, and they also affect plants. And there's actually some new ones that are emerging in cannabis as people don't have, and they haven't had access. I mean, look, most growers have been trying to avoid you know, a SWAT team for most of the last 50 years, they haven't been able to access a lot of these technologies. And, you know, so as a result, you've got a lot of bad practices that have, you know, unfortunately been put in place, and you've now spread different pathogens around. And now as the industry is suddenly exploding, you've got pathogens all over the place, right? And it's certainly a problem. And, you know, it can, I mean, we meet customers and growers all the time that, you know, tell us about how they've been devastated by some of these challenges. And they're not easy to solve. It's not like, oh, abracadabra, we build a tissue culture lab and everything's perfect and clean. It takes a lot of work. And we've been doing a lot of research. We have a pathology group, and we've been, you know, trying to develop new and improved assays to detect some of these things. So it really is a challenging issue for the industry.
So coming from the pharmaceutical side of things, you know, and working with the FDA for years, I'm assuming, does that benefit you at Front Range Biosciences? Can you predict where the FDA is going?
I wish I could predict. So yeah, I mean, you know, working in human diagnostics in the clinical world, you know, a lot of the data that we generated. So I developed assays and lab tests for clinical trial programs, and a lot of that, you know, was going to have to withstand scrutiny from the FDA. So I'm fairly familiar with their process and what types of, you know, things are required. And obviously, you can dive into all the details in terms of you know, modern drug discovery programs and development. But you know, at the end of the day, it's you know, I certainly have been able to engage with different groups to try and support you know, lobbying efforts you know, to with FDA and with Congress, and so groups like the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, I've been on their board of directors and helping support some of their initiatives with the FDA. I was able to testify at the FDA about a year and a half ago. They had a public hearing, and I was selected to be able to give a little talk there. So yeah, at the end of the day, it's you know, the FDA's mission is important. And, you know, while a lot of people don't like the FDA and don't like pharma, which I understand, you know, it at the end of the day, they're there to provide oversight and safety and put in place, you know, very important standards for production manufacturing that, you know, that keep, you know, consumers safe. And I think in hemp, it's really a big issue. Is it kind of, we had this broad scale legalization post farm bill. Without that regulatory structure in place, mm-hmm. you know, people are able to sell whatever they want, and yeah. you know, customers don't have really a way to decipher, you know, what's real or not, or what's dangerous or not. And so we've been pushing a lot for, you know, Congress to you know, to either put in some legislation or work with the FDA to get things like dietary supplements regulatory path approval, so that, you know, CBD and some of these other cannabinoids have a clear path to market.
Yeah.
So just one more question on that. You know, does Front Range Biosciences, what do you offer your consumers that is just a bit more unique in that sense? Like, how do you protect them, you know, on the hemp side of things, we'll say? We'll just limit it to that.
Yeah, so, you know, at the end of the day, we're, you know, as I mentioned in the beginning, we're really focused on the nursery side of supply chain. So the very beginning, right? So behind every product, whether it's flower, vape, oils, extracts, you know, live resin, whatever, it's, you know, it all starts with a plant, right? And, you know, and our focus is, you know, we provide growers and producers with plants and seeds. That's our core business. And, you know, we leverage the Clean Stock Nursery to support, you know, clean plant production and hopefully minimize the growers' need to use things like pesticides or other toxic inputs that could be detrimental, you know, downstream in the supply chain. And we're also working to support companies in product development. So being able to bring interesting new ingredients to bear. So things like minor cannabinoids are really hot. So for example, we've got a new THCV variety that we're putting out in the marketplace in California later this year and into 2021. And we've got several other minor cannabinoids that we're working on. So CBG and CBC are some that are starting to show up. And so anyways, we've got lots of new products there we're trying to offer. And then we also are starting, we've got breeding programs and things like fiber and grain as well, as we start to see demand for ingredients in both the industrial hemp side of the equation, as well as plant-based protein.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
Do Do you, I have to ask this, because you mentioned nursery a couple of times and providing growers with what they need. Does climate change affect what you guys do at all? Is there any thought to the difference of growing plants indoors versus outside?
Yeah, that's a big question. The short answer is yes. So climate change affects all of us, but especially in agriculture and even horticulture. Just for example, when you're growing in a climate controlled greenhouse in Colorado, but you have rapid temperature swings, going from 80, 90 degrees down to below freezing in a 24 hour period, that can shock plants, even though you've got heaters and fans and lights and everything. So it can create problems even there. And then same thing on indoor. I mean, indoor, you've got a little more, insulation, but you can still, your HVAC systems, all that can be affected. Outdoor. Yeah. I mean, outdoors is the largest impact. I mean, we've seen, Colorado is a great example because of where we sit in the Front Range. You've got the intersection of the plains, running right into the Rocky Mountains. And so we have all kinds of really, it kind of amplifies the weather and climate changes we see here. And, we had a snow in September that was just unheard of. Wow. It destroyed, some hemp farms and some cannabis farms too. We've seen, in the Southeast, we had a field trial program with hemp growers, and we grew plants in Alabama that got hammered by flooding and a hurricane. We had same thing in North Carolina and Virginia. We had growers that had, hurricane force winds and even a tornado, hit some of these farms. And so at the end of the day, agriculture and farming and production of plants is all about, it's biology, and it's all about, predictability and, being able to achieve a profit margin on your crop. And the more the weather changes and becomes unpredictable, whether it's getting hotter or colder, it doesn't really matter. It's just that unpredictability. It makes it really, really hard to plan your farm and execute. And, and a lot of farmers have just gotten destroyed this year. I didn't even mention wildfires, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just been one thing after the other.
Yeah, it could devastate the profit margins. So offsetting climate change could actually do companies a lot of good and help absolutely. Them become profitable. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So looking ahead,
I think it may push more and more companies. We're seeing companies in like traditional veg and fruit crops, starting to do some indoor vertical farming, right? And I think we see more and more of that. And that's where you get this interesting cross section between the traditional cannabis indoor industry and and modern agriculture and horticulture.
Yeah, there's a kinship there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm learning so much right now. Now, so looking ahead, can you give us a sense of what does 2021 bring for Front Range?
Yeah, so we got a lot of exciting developments on the horizon. We're going to continue our nursery expansion in the California cannabis market. And we've got plans to bring on a new tissue culture lab there and an additional indoor breeding capacity that will allow us to better serve some of our customers and the market there. We're also in conversations with some companies in Colorado to launch a Colorado cannabis genetics platform as well, and have plans to open that up in 2021. And then in hemp, we're just going to continue to expand the program. It's been a challenging year in hemp, but we're starting to see the market really show signs of coming back, and we've got just tons of exciting new products in the pipeline from all the breeding work that we've done over the last couple of years. So lots of new minor cannabinoids, improvements for regional performance. We've got like hemp varieties, for example, that perform really well in the South with things like mold resistance and longer flowering cycles that allow them to produce more weight in the fall when it's cooler. So anyways, lots of developments like that. And we've also got our eye on some international opportunities and really just trying to build more partnerships. We've built this really incredible platform and we're here to help support some of the big companies and brands that are emerging in both the cannabis and the hemp markets.
So Doc, on the topic of hemp, I tell people all the time that hemp can be used for so many things. Anything from like hempcrete to actually being, however the science is, make it into a fuel source to power an automobile. And they look at me like I'm crazy. Am I crazy, or is there like this giant movement to like kind of silence guys like you and be like, no, we need traditional, you know, sources of oil and energy and cement or whatever, and we don't need hemp? Or or am I right that hemp could be used for just countless different things?
Yeah, so hemp, I mean, the cannabis plant has potential to do all those things. And I'll talk about some specifics really quick. When you look at, you know, obviously we know about cannabinoids and terpenes and all these you know, small molecules that are used for wellness and recreation, all that fun stuff. But you look at things like industrial materials, so fiber. You know, if you compare growing hemp to growing cotton, talk to cotton farmers. Cotton's a pretty tough plant to grow. And the economics of growing cotton versus growing hemp, you know, it could be very interesting. And I think it's going to easily compete. You know, look at industrial materials like lumber, right? You know, hemp's a faster cycle, and being able to produce construction materials, whether it's hempcrete or pressed wood type materials, you know, plywoods and fiber boards, you know, I think a huge opportunity there. And then when you look on the nutritional side and you look at grain, it has a balanced amino acid profile. It has an omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acid ratio that's pretty similar to the human body. So it makes it a nice omega source. And you know, it's got just a lot of, it's got dietary fiber, for example. So it has the potential to be a superfood to compete with other plant-based protein and crops like pea protein or even soy. And so, yeah, I think at the end of the day, as the infrastructure gets built, you know, once again, it's going to take time. You have to modify your farming practices. You have to modify your manufacturing facilities, you know, how you process these ingredients from the farm to the product. You know, that's going to take time. But as you begin to modify these from some of the more traditional crops, I think we'll see hemp being a strong competitor in all of those categories.
Absolutely. That's a good place to leave it, Elliot. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. We do have to wrap up, but I want to give you the chance to just briefly touch on your Series B. I know you're looking right now. Could you just give us a sense of what that's going to be used for? You probably already have.
Certainly. Yeah, so we're well on our way. We've already closed a little over two-thirds of the Series B. It's been led by Tuatara Capital. They've been great in investment partners and investors into the company and supporters. And, you know, our focus is to continue to expand the platform, you know, as we talked about here. So expansion into the existing markets and even some new markets. And then I think also to continue to build our IP portfolio on the breeding side, and then even some select M&A activity. So, you know, it's been a tough year and we're seeing opportunities for consolidation and, you know, certain interesting assets, you know, for us, things that are like technology related, intellectual property assets, germplasm for breeding or seed. You know, those are all interesting targets from an M&A perspective.
Perfect. It has been a pleasure having you on, John. We have to do this again. I feel like there's so much more we didn't get to.
I love this. This has been super fun.
Yeah, no, really, really appreciate having you on. Real quick, what's your website? Where can people find you?
Frontrangebio.com.
Perfect. Frontrangebio.com. Thank you again, Dr. Vaught. Be well, be healthy, and we will talk to you soon, sir.
All right.
Take
thanks care, for the Doc. Opportunity. Yep. You guys have a good one.
All right. That was an awesome show. I'm super, super excited we just dropped some knowledge bombs on me and hopefully the audience.
I had to get the hemp question in there because, you know, people do look at me like I'm crazy, but whatever. It's fine.
No.
We got the doctor on the horn to tell us what it's about.
I'm the biggest advocate for hemp straws. I'm like, give me a hemp straw company right now. Anyway, I'm out, peeps. Super thankful to all the pre-market prep guests for listening in. This show's not over. Let's bring over your co-host for the next section.
Yes.
Ann Donahoe from KCSA. I'm sure we all know her from her podcast, but
The Green Rush.
I'm out. The Green Rush. I'll let her introduce her. I'll let you all talk about the election special. Thanks again for having me on.
Elliot, have a great night. Watch some scary movies. Happy Halloween.
Have a good one, guys.
Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.